this is my first international experience. Like, this is my first time being an expat. And I know for a lot of people, that's like, wow, like your first time, like right out the gate, you're in Saudi Arabia. But I mean, I can't imagine any other way. So I think it's fantastic. And I would say that being recruited is definitely the easiest way to find work. I've definitely have people that I've met in my expat journey that have not taken that route. But I mean, for me, everything was pretty much packaged very well. And my package, that whole process started on LinkedIn, like literally seeing the job.
I'm Felina Jean, and this is Black Broads Abroad. I'm an international woman of leisure who said peace out to the United States in 2011, and I have not looked back except at this ass, honey. Since then, I've lived on four continents with travel to over 40 countries. Along my journey, I've come to know some very compelling Black women from all over the world who also said fuck you to their comfort zones. I created this podcast to inspire Black women in the diaspora to take risks and live their very best lives.
Alexis DeBerry is a driven event planner and producer with extensive expertise in corporate, social events, and diplomatic relations. Her passionate commitment for service excellence and drive to foster environments of relaxed yet refined ambiance have been buttressed by her many years in the luxury hospitality industry with the Ritz-Carlton. Building on the service of excellence, Alexis's international diplomacy skills blossomed while working with such notable groups as the U.S. Global Leadership Coalition, the World Bank, U.S.-China Business Council, National U.S. Arab Chamber of Commerce, the Atlantic Council, and embassies including the Embassy of the People's Republic of China and the Embassy of the Kingdom of Bahrain. This invaluable diplomatic experience has allowed Alexis to craft the perfect environment for notable VIP guests, including His Royal Highness Prince Khalid Al Faisal, the First Lady of Zambia, and His Excellency Ali Al Naimi. A native of Snyder, New York, Alexis earned a Bachelor's of Fine Arts in Musical Theater from Howard University in Washington, D.C. Alexis relocated from Washington, D.C. to Saudi Arabia to join a prominent research institution. Welcome, Alexis.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm so happy that we now have this opportunity to do this interview. I'll give like a little bit of background on how we even came into each other's orbit, e-orbit, if you will, because when I first started the podcast, you were like an early listener, early adapter. And so I've just been following your journey. And then I was like, oh, there's all these synergies. You living in Saudi, I lived in Qatar, which is actually inside of Saudi, technically speaking. So thank you for your time this morning. And my first question is, how are you doing right now amidst this pandemic? And like, how are things on the ground in Saudi Arabia for you?
Well, I'm fine. Like, I am more than fine. People ask all the time, like, or at the beginning, people were asking if I wanted to stay, if I was afraid. And the research institution that I work for is amazing, like phenomenal. And we live and work within the same compound system. So we closed our gates like over 60 days ago. And we've been tracking everybody within our community. Like nobody is able to, you can leave if you have like a medical appointment at a proper hospital, but that means upon your return, our security literally will escort you to your home. Your home is placed on what we have as a quarantine list. There are cameras and everything across our living landscape anyway, just for general security. So if people see you out, you will get a fine both from the kingdom and you are also in jeopardy of losing your job. The nice thing though is that when you are in like this quarantine space, groceries and things are delivered to your home. They have meals and things delivered to you. You can have your laundry sent out. Like you're still very well cared for. And you are in quarantine for 21 days. On the 20th day, they test you for COVID. those tests are flown out to a lab in the capital city in Riyadh. They review the test. If you are clear, you're able to leave. If you test positive, which has happened to 15 people so far, then you end up going to, we have a relationship with a really nice hospital, like one of the best ones in the city. And so then you go from here to their medical hotel. And then you start your
medical hotel. I love
The hospitals are getting kind of full. So they've converted a lot of the, there are a lot of hotels here. Mm-hmm. More than I ever thought would be necessary.
Yeah, that's a Middle Eastern phenomenon. I will get into that. But I'm glad you're safe, and I'm kind of digging the laws. You know, that incents people to stay their ass put, which I'm here for.
Right now we're under. Tomorrow starts 24-hour curfew countrywide. Like, there's 1 hour you're allowed to go out for whatever kind of pre-approved, it's a grocery shopping or whatever, like you have to get pre-approval from the government. Because I live in a compound, and maybe some of your listeners don't exactly know what a compound is. We have our own little medical clinic. We have our own K-12 school. We have 3 preschools, like just about everything you would need. I mean, we've got recreation centers, we've got gyms, we've got swimming pools, everything you need to exist for your day-to-day is pretty much here. And so everyone that lives here has access. So I can go out within our community within the 24-hour curfew. But if I lived if I lived outside of these walls, if I lived like in Jeddah or Riyadh or whatever, that would be different. Then I really wouldn't be able to leave my house.
Right. I'm glad you brought up compounds. So compounds are basically cities unto themselves, where like a lot of the expat professionals, they live in their own little isolated cities that, you know,
yes.
Right. So yeah, those are actually pretty, I actually opted off of mine.
really?
I opted off. Yeah. I opted off, and I was living in Qatar. I got a place at the Pearl because they allowed us to have a housing allowance, and it was like a private island away from the people I work with. And my housing allowance was, I think I must have paid like $200 or $300 more than what my housing allowance allocated, and lived on a private island that, I mean, humble stunt, but not really. Like Janet Jackson lived there. It was just stupid. So yeah, we'll get into Middle Eastern living and like dispel some of the myths that many Westerners might have about it. Okay, so thank you for that update. I mentioned in your bio that you have over a decade of experience in international diplomacy and event planning. Can you walk us through a bit of your trajectory and how you went from earning a degree in musical theater at Howard University to what you are doing now?
I love my alma mater. I graduated right before the last recession. And so I left and I wanted to move to New York City. I think like every musical theater major, you want to go beyond Broadway. And so my plan was I needed to save $10,000, because that was the magic number in my head. And if I could have that $10,000, I would be able to move to New York City and live my musical theater life. Like I would have enough money as a cushion, and I could just, you know, like wait tables or do whatever. To do that, I graduated and I was like, I need a job. And I got 2 jobs right out of graduation. One was in retail, and the other was working in this historic hotel in downtown DC. And it was there that I realized that I like taking care of people. I'm a people person, I'm an extrovert by nature, and I love caring for people. Like I was the girl at the front desk where if you told me that it was your anniversary, I would, you know, go to the chef and ask for chocolate-covered strawberries and a bottle of champagne. I would run around to the florist and put, you know, flowers in your room. And I would do it all at the hotel's expense, because hotels do have a little bit of a line item for that. And my manager at the time was like, this behavior doesn't exactly work with this particular brand of hotels, but the Ritz would be a place where you would excel.
Oh, that was very, that was free game.
They called their former boss over at the Ritz and got me an interview, and I nailed it and I got the job, and I started working in events at the Ritz.
Wow, that is so dope. You know, when I read your bio and then I got to the theater part, I was like, oh, she's my spirit animal. I have a theater background. Like, people wonder, like, what were you going to do? I'm not doing anything with my theater degree. Well, yeah, everything is a performance.
You are. You're doing it right now.
I take that back. Everything is a performance. So that is so cool. So you found your niche in the hospitality industry. That's great. So there are a lot of Black women who are interested in the idea of becoming an expat, and there are so many ways to do it. As a four-time expat, I've had just a gamut of experiences with relocating to each different country. And I have to say, the easiest transition is through being recruited for work. Yeah, your visa, your housing, oh, that's a whole other show. All of that is facilitated on your behalf. You don't have to worry about the grunt work. But other than that, what was your first international assignment, and what was the process that you undertook to secure overseas employment?
So this is my first international assignment. Like, this is my first time being an expat. And I know for a lot of people, that's like, wow, like your first time, like right out the gate, you're in Saudi Arabia. But I mean, I can't imagine any other way. So I think it's fantastic. And I would say that being recruited is definitely the easiest way to find work. I've definitely have people that I've met in my expat journey that have not taken that route. But I mean, for me, everything was pretty much packaged very well. And my package, that whole process started on LinkedIn, like literally seeing the job and hitting like...
by themselves. And then like Dubai reminds me of like Vegas on steroids, but like, yeah, it's Vegas on steroids. And personally, you know, I didn't appreciate Dubai as a place to want to live or, not particularly. So, okay.
If I could move to Dubai to do what I do and have like the same kind of package, I would probably do it. It is because events in Dubai are just taking off. Like they're just next level. And so there's a part of me that's like, oh my God, that's amazing. However, with the 2030 vision for the kingdom, events here are about to take off. Like it is interesting to be in Saudi at this time where it feels almost like I feel like all of the GCC countries are like cousins.
They definitely
I mean, they are cousins,
are,
but like
in a real
you
way.
Have one cousin that is, you know, yeah. And your cousin is like, you know, I got this new jacket. Like I'm flossing. I look real good. And you know, your other cousin who doesn't normally do that is like, oh, that looks pretty cool. That looks pretty dope. Okay. Oh, not everybody in the family is gonna get these jackets and look dope. And so Saudi's kind of like, oh, we can do this. I can do this too. I can do it better than you.
Wow. That's a good analogy.
The next tallest building in the world is being built right now in Saudi. Like they're working on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, everybody wants, but like it's like cousins. Like it's that whole sort of like tit for tat relationship, but then it's all like their family. So somebody from the outside steps in and starts picking on one of the countries that's not part of the group.
They'll galvanize.
They join together to go like, hold up, you can't talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll galvanize real quick. You know, it was crazy because like I was in Qatar in 2014, but during like the GCC crises, and was June 2017. I just remember on June 5th, waking up and like my whole world had changed. I just woke up and there were about 2 or 3 dozen countries that was just like, we don't F with Qatar anymore. And then land borders and maritime borders and air borders were immediately closed. And it was just like, you know, as I mean, obviously I'm not a native to the region. At first I thought, okay, this is gonna pass in a few days. You know, maybe
I think that's what everybody thought.
Yeah, because every once in a while, you know, they do that. They puff their chest out at each other, and then, you know, they usually squelch it. I can't believe that it's still going on right now. Because my friends, I mean, I had friends in Saudi that would like, they would drive up for the weekend. It was just like, I'm from LA, yeah. So it was like the equivalent of driving from LA to Vegas or something. And like, yeah, like all of that had changed. It was like, it was crazy. Yeah, I hope they get it together. But like you said, if somebody pop off on one of them right now, baby.
They would all turn around and be like, excuse you, this is family business.
Right.
But I think that's what I love about this region. Like one of the things that I have come to really appreciate is the importance of personal privacy, mm-hmm. and the importance of like, what is family business is family business. And I used to say, it would be like, okay, so you and I are talking, and I don't know, we know this girl named Carla, and in Carla's house, maybe she hosts parties with boys, which you cannot do. Like, you're not supposed to do that in the country. There's no dating. Right. There's like, the co-mingling is in public and pre-approved areas, but a house party with, yeah, it's, that is not appropriate.
No.
So if you and I are talking, and we're talking about what's happening in Carla's house, and we'll flip it for the moment, and we'll make us all Saudis, and her name really wouldn't be Carla, but for this instance it is. And then we bring in another girl named Imani. And Imani comes over and she hears us talking and we're like, have you heard this thing? The general response of most Saudis has almost always been, why do you know what's going on in her house? It isn't this is a bad thing. I mean, we'll get you all the gossip and stuff because yes, there is, but the first upfront is always what is happening in somebody's home is personal and private. So how do you know and why do you know? That is a more important question than what's actually happening in the house. Like the level of respect for personal privacy is very important here. And what I'm finding is I'm interested to see how they're going to balance that with the need to know where people are going and on what's happening with all the stuff with COVID. Because right. What is working in, or what we believe is working in like Korea and in China, Taiwan, in Hong Kong, where they're doing like the social tracing and things. I know that they're looking at maybe doing that here. And I also know that that's a level of personal privacy invasion. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that dynamic. So we talked a little bit earlier in the interview about compound living and what that is. I wanted you to talk a bit more about what is the standard of living like for an expat there, especially as a professional young woman?
Okay, so I was living in DC before, and I was living in a one bedroom apartment with that sort of like living dining room all in one kind of space. Mm-hmm. And I moved here. I live in a 3-bedroom townhouse that has a 2-car garage. I live 2 blocks from the Red Sea. Like I literally can leave my house now and in 5 minutes be looking at blue water and like white beaches. And the water here is super blue, like Caribbean blue.
Wow.
It's gorgeous.
Wow. What a contrast.
And I pay less here than what I paid in the US.
Yeah, that's, Yeah, and that's another thing about, it'll be information for our Patreon members, but that's another thing about when you're living in the Middle East that, or not even just the Middle East, when you're recruited to work overseas, most times mm-hmm. your remuneration package will include a housing allowance, a transportation allowance of some sort. I don't know what the times are going to be like in like post-pandemic world, though. So, who knows? Who freaking knows what's going to happen these days? What's the biggest lesson that you have learned about stepping outside of your comfort zone?
It sounds cliche, but you know, if I dream it, I can create it. And that no matter where you go, like you will find people. You will find people. You will find your tribe. Like I have been incredibly blessed that when I've had to step up professionally here, because I tell people, like, I live in a space where I am gifted for my work as compensation a lot, but I also have to do a lot. And when I am overstretching myself, when I'm pushing myself to the point where I'm like, oh my God, I just want to take a break, or I just, you know, like, maybe I want to go back home, I turn around and I have a community of other African American expats that are here. And they're not all African American. I should say that it's across the diaspora, because I have friends that are Black British here, that are Afro-Pean, who are French, girlfriends from Kenya, girlfriends from Uganda, from Ghana, that are all working here. And when you take that step out and you initiate the, okay, I need a little bit of help, it is amazing how your community will rally around you and help you to find the resources or point you in the right directions to be able to go collect what you need.
Yeah, building that community is so important. It's so important to your survival overseas. So what advice do you have for Black women that are thinking of possibly taking the plunge and moving overseas?
Do it. Plan, but do it. Like, take the leap of faith. Like, I always think you're taking a leap of faith into God's arms. So you're taking that leap. I will say that if you're coming at least to this region, research the company. The company you work for in Saudi Arabia will drive your experience. If you work for a company that is known to be reputable, that is known to treat its people well, like the company I work with, like, you'll have an amazing experience. I've also met people that have worked for intermediary companies where they believe they're working for the corporation, but they end up as a contractor and they're not treated quite as well.
Right.
So I would say that will then dictate your experience. But your blue passport, for sure, it gives you so much credibility. It gives you, what I tell everybody is I have the closest experience to what I believe white privilege feels like.
Oh my gosh.
In Saudi Arabia.
But,
and I don't have it, but I think I this is as close as what I think it might
Yeah.
be.
That is, you know, that is so clutch. I actually want to do like a bonus episode on that experience, because like having been an expat for like almost 10 years now, it is quite an adjustment even visiting the United States, because girl, I feel like I've been passing. I've been passing for the past decade. And so I go back home with my rich white woman sensibilities that I'm afforded with my blue passport overseas. And it's like, girl, no, you remember, like, you are a nigga here. it's quite an adjustment. So what's next for Alexis, and where can people keep up with you on social media?
Well, right now, before COVID, I was looking at doing a bit more philanthropic and more beautiful events, helping people and helping others to design weddings. I've had a couple of micro weddings. I've even had a few weddings here in Saudi. So I was looking into transitioning into that. But as we are doing our social distancing, most of the people in my industry are kind of taking a pause. So I'm definitely taking a pause on looking at what that looks like for me and just focusing more on work and more on the diplomacy side of things, because everybody still needs to talk to everybody else. And I would say you can keep up with me on social media. Desert Debutante is where I chronicle most of my adventures. I will admit that I've been a bit quiet lately because it's also been Ramadan, and I have a habit of wanting to post food photos and fasting and posting food photos. Doesn't always go so well together, but right. Ramadan is in 2 days, so then I'll be back to normal.
Thank you so much for your time.
Shout out to our Patreon members. Thank you so much for your support. If you too are interested in supporting the Black Broads Abroad movement, keep up with us on social media, and that's at Black Broads Abroad, BlackBroadsAbroad, and that's on IG and Facebook. And if you're interested in supporting on Patreon, visit www.patreon.com/BlackBroadsAbroad.